let's talk about Quibi.
Let's do it.
Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by Mr. Vin Forte.
Hey.
Vin, how are you?
I am great. I got my, I'm about to sign up for Quibi.
Oh, boy.
I'm hearing only good things.
Oh, boy. You're going to be disappointed.
And I'm sure. Well, hold on. I'm on the screen right now. Let me, apparently Quibi closed down. I cannot access Quibi.
Yes. I also tried to access Quibi in preparation for today's topic, and it looks like the website's still running, but like there's no button to join. And I'm like, wait, how do I join? How do I sign up? And then I went to the frequently asked questions section, and it's all about like closing shop. Like, when will I get my money back? When are you going to stop billing me?
So what's a good sign when you have to put in your FAQ, how am I going to get my money back?
I know. So if you don't know what we're talking about, right now we're talking about Quibi. Quibi was launched April 6th this year, 2020. It lived for mere months.
It had a summer.
Quibi.
The summer of Quibi.
Yes, Quibi was a streaming service created by Jeffrey Katzenberg of, you know, he was part of the 90s NBC. Disney Renaissance and what do you call it? DreamWorks. And his partner for Quibi was Meg Whitman, not the actress from Arrested Development, but Meg Whitman, the business lady who's Procter & Gamble and she ran for office or whatever. Them together came up with Quibi. And Vin, can you tell the audience who's not familiar with Quibi what the gimmick was?
Oh, it's the dumbest gimmick in the world. So Quibi is think of Netflix, where they've got, think of like modern Netflix too, where it's not just a big streaming library, but it's all like original programming.
Yeah.
And now take away the ability to watch it anywhere else except on your phone. And also not only that, but on your phone, broken up into basically like 10-minute chapters.
Yeah.
And also in portrait mode. You can't watch it like landscape or widescreen.
Well, didn't they have, I don't know if they did this for every show, but one of their things was that you could watch it both ways. I forget what they called it, but it was basically like, oh, you could be watching it and then turn it and you'll see a different kind of image. I mean, from what I've read from reviews, it never really worked in the innovative way that they said it was going to work. It really just felt like, okay, now I'm watching it cropped, and now I'm watching it not cropped.
Right. And the whole, basically, like, the point is, like, you're tied to your phone, which they saw, like, in their heads, their thinking was, everyone's on their phones all the time, so why wouldn't they want a streaming service on their phone? Meanwhile, comparing the fact that, yes, people watch stuff on their phone, but then when they get home, they're continuing to watch it on their computer or on their TV. I mean, we talked, you know, at length last episode about the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about the Nintendo Switch, which has made a huge hit, is because it's both a portable device and a home device that you can dock. Like, people want the content. They don't want the device or like the app. Like, they want like they want to be able to take it wherever they want to take it and then enjoy it on their terms. And when you're straddling it to just your smartphone, it's very hard to like have that content pick up steam or go viral. Like, if I'm watching a show on Quibi and then I tell you like, oh, you got to check this shit out, then it's, and you go, well, how do I watch it? And I tell you, oh, you can only watch it on your phone.
But not just that.
Oh, well, I don't want to watch it on my phone.
But not just that, Vin. There was no free version of it. They did give people a 90-day free trial, but unlike Hulu, there was no free version of the platform. There was the $4.99 version, which had ads, and then the $7.99 version, which didn't have ads. And this was, other than the fact that it was a weird concept, this was, I think, another big misstep for them. not having any free version. Because that means...
Because you couldn't, like, test it out.
And nothing can go viral. Nothing can go viral. You know what it was the wrong model in for the space what it was. Because they were trying to be like Disney Plus or Amazon Prime or Netflix. But really, when you're on your phone, the real thing that Quibi was competing with is like TikTok and YouTube, which all things that are free and you can share.
Right. The big sin with Quibi is it was basically like old people looking at a phone and not realizing that there's already like 15 different apps that do the thing that they want to do like a million times better.
Right. And I wish I could tell you from critical experience how these shows panned out being 5 to 10 minutes at a time. I suspect that narratively it must have been very odd, but I didn't have Quibi, just like you didn't have Quibi. So I can't really tell you
right
how it went. Maybe one day the content will be available elsewhere. I doubt it because I don't think there were any Quibi hits.
No, the thing I can tell you about Quibi is that most of Quibi's content was basically made up of shows that were shopped around to a million other networks, and everyone passed on them except Quibi.
Yeah, like,
which is why you have a lot of filler shows where it's like Chrissy Teigen has like a
Chrissy's courtroom
court. Show.
Chrissy's Court. Then the Flipped, which is like a fictional house flipping show, but it's haunted houses.
Yeah. And like they have some named people. Like I think like Kevin Hart has a show. Right. But it's like nothing that you'd want to watch. It's just them going, it's just like that celebrity's worst idea, and it landed on Quibi.
The reboot of Reno 911.
Yeah, that too. Reno 911 punked.
The one show that looked kind of interesting to me was called Dummy. And it was like this woman, she found out her boyfriend has one of those like real doll sex dolls. And like the real doll like can talk to her, kind of like Wilfred, I guess. And she was friends with her boyfriend's real doll. And that was the one that they at least
like,
they advertised on regular television.
Right. But even that sounds like an idea that was passed around and then just like landed on Quibi.
Yeah. Netflix was like, no, we're good.
Yeah. And then you had the weird marketing campaign where it was a bunch of celebrities going, referring to Quibi as a verb. Where it's like, it would be just Quibi. Like, you'd be waiting for a restaurant and be like, oh, it'll just take... I've got a Quibi to spare. I'll watch something. I'll do a Quibi.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a root of an idea here, right? Because there is a such thing as media snacking. And it's something we do at work. It's something we do to break up our day. We look at a video. We, you know, look at Twitter. It gives us a little out. It gives us a little break. But I don't think people want to watch narratives or 5-minute narratives. Or you know what I mean?
Well, again, it's the platform is the problem, because any example you could bring up, because I could tell like you're working the muscles in your brain trying to like even like cape for Quibi. Like, and any idea you could throw out there,
yeah,
the counter answer is literally do it on YouTube. Like anything short form that you want to do that's like independent from a mainstream kind of standpoint, you do it on YouTube. Anything that's more narrative, the answer is find an Amazon Prime or Netflix right. to go to.
See, that's the thing. That's the problem here, which is Jeffrey Katzenberg, he's an old school executive. So with this type of content, it's bottom up. You know what I mean? YouTube videos, Vines. These are, you know, it doesn't. These things still become monetized, but for the most part, they're not top down. They're bottom up. And Jeffrey Katzenberg, you know, comes from the film industry, so all he knows is top down, and top down is not what works for the medium of this little media snacking. right? You don't need a big budget little videos to watch on your phone with actual actors in them.
Yeah, and that got us thinking of other like failed streaming services. Because Quibi is not the first, and it's not going to be the last.
No, it's funny. I Googled failed streaming services, and there was a few that, you know, I remember, and I'm sure the audience will remember. But then there's tons more. I mean, there's been, like, a lot. There's been, like, hundreds that just came and gone, and some of them I never even fucking heard of. But let me ask you a question. Before we get to the other failed experiments, what Quibi has been saying publicly is, well, it's the pandemic's fault. Because Quibi was meant to be something that you snack on at work, and now people aren't working, and they're not out in the world. They're stuck in their houses, so they don't need short-form things. I think that that's bullshit.
That's absolutely bullshit, because that sounds like a Quibi problem and not a rest-of-the-world problem. That sounds like a Quibi didn't plan for this problem.
Is there any way that this idea could work?
It could have worked if they had just said, hey, we're, you know, from the people who brought you DreamWorks and, you know, these other giant projects, we're going to put a bunch of money into an app and we're going to load it up with original content. And we just want to be like a new streaming network for a certain type of program. And they could have started small and grown and said, like, Quibi is going to be, you know, shows from people, shows from big celebrities that you know, new innovative ideas, cutting edge programming, and made it so that you could watch it wherever. And right. Hey, we've got a free version with ads and we've got a paid version without ads.
I'm trying to think. See, I can't think of a, I'm trying to think of a way that it can work, but I can't think of a, I can think of a way that there could be good.
There's content. No way it would have worked.
Yeah, I can't think of a way that you could make money off of it. I mean, a way, if you want good content, I mean, one way to do it would be go to YouTube, go to good YouTubers and say, hey, we want to give you some money, you know, like someone like Jenny Nicholson, or, you know what I mean? Or some other, or booktubers, or like, you know, the people that make these, you know, people that usually just sort of live on Patreon money and make videos, just be like, hey, we'll give you some money and you can do a little bit more with it. So that would be good for the medium, but that wouldn't make money. You can't charge for that.
Yeah, no, there's no situation where Quibi would have been a good idea.
What was its, what was, what does the name Quibi mean?
I don't even know. I feel like it's just something they came up with.
I feel like it's a terrible name. Not that it would have been better with a different name, but I also think the name alone.
Okay, it's stupid. It means quick bites.
Oh, that is stupid. That's very stupid. Yeah, that's no good. Let's talk about some other streamers. Well, look, let's, you know, a quick history. In 2007, Netflix started streaming. You know, the first generation of streamers are Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Hulu. The second generation is Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus, HBO Max, and Peacock. How many of these have you watched? What do you subscribe to?
I, at various points, I've had Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu. Peacock, I know, is a new one. I am interested in it. I'm also kind of getting interested in HBO Max.
Right.
Because I think they've got like a lot of good original programming coming out. What's going to boil down to going forward is you're going to see a lot more services like a Peacock or an HBO Max.
Yeah.
Where, for people who don't know, HBO Max is not just like an HBO Plus. It's the Warner Brothers streaming service.
Yes.
It's the Warner Media streaming service. So not only do you get HBO stuff with it, you also get like Warner programming, like anything on, right. I guess, like CW, legacy programming. There's like some stuff from Comedy Central on there. Like, you're going to see right. stuff from all over.
See, I think
they've got the entire Ghibli catalog.
Right. See, I think people like the idea of niche streaming, but they want to pay once. You know what I mean? Like, they want a situation where they pay for something, and then within that service, there are the little niches. Like the way Disney Plus has you know, the Star Wars section and the Simpsons section and the Mickey Mouse section and the Marvel section. When it's something that's niche and you still have to pay for it, like DC Universe, that does not really work.
No, that's why you're seeing, again, like an HBO Max, where it's not just HBO, it's everything else. You know, like you said, Disney Plus. And even like beyond Disney Plus, Disney also has a service now where they've like partnered with Hulu because they own 1/3 of Hulu. I guess now with their acquisition of Fox, they own the majority of Hulu.
Yeah.
And they also own ESPN.
Yeah.
So they have this thing where like for like, I think like $12 or $14 a month, you get ESPN, Hulu, and Disney Plus all for that one price.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of services now are going to like, hey, we'll keep the cost low, but we better make sure that we get a lot of people.
Yes. By the way, speaking of pricing, Netflix just raised its price again.
Yeah, Netflix is in a weird spot. I feel like they don't have as much content as they used to, but like they're suddenly raised, like they're always like raising prices every couple of years.
I feel like Netflix is really no longer a place where you can find libraries of content which exists prior. I think Netflix was so successful that all of these other corporations that had these libraries said, we need to do this with our stuff and stop making deals with Netflix. So I feel like Netflix now is mostly like its own movie studio / television network. It's just its own stuff.
Oh, yeah, because like even just like 5 years ago, you could go on Netflix and you'd see a bunch of the Marvel movies, Disney content.
Right.
Stuff from all the different studios, DreamWorks. And now it's like all the Marvel stuff is gone. All the Disney stuff is gone. All the Ghibli stuff is gone because that's under Warner. Anything Criterion is gone because I believe that's under Hulu.
Right. And for a while, Criterion, I think, had its own. Either had its own or it was matched up with TCM, because TCM had its own like classic movie. There was actually a couple different classic streamers that none of them really took off. But you know what I'm talking about, right? There was TCM did classic movies.
There were a couple really niche services that marketed themselves really towards like film buffs and aficionados, where it was like you can have access, like I think before HBO Max, going back a couple of years now, there was I think like a Warner Archive service where you could pay a certain amount of money and get access to the entire Warner Archive, and people suspected that's where these services were going to go.
Right.
I think they were half right. Like they're right in the sense that these companies are going to hoard all their own content, but it's not going to be like a legacy thing.
Right.
Where, oh, you just pay a bunch of money and you get access to all of our archives. It's going to be like an HBO Max where you're going to get a bunch of different sort of mini services under the same banner.
Right. Yeah. Niche doesn't work. Although I don't pay for it, but I have access to somebody's Shudder. So during the month of October, I looked at Shudder a lot. Although they did not have a very good library. And
no.
Shudder Originals are real bad. Real bad. I did have DC Universe for a little while. And DC Universe does still exist, but the only good shows on it were then bought by HBO Max or Netflix. I think Titans went to Netflix and then Doom Patrol went to HBO Max. So literally they were pilfered of their best stuff.
Yeah, that DC Universe one never really made much sense because they'd have promised you their entire archive but like only rolled out certain stuff.
Right. It was missing the Adam West Batman. Like it was pretty incomplete. It was a good place if you're interested in like all those Warner Brother animated films that they've been coming out with on DVD since like 2005. That was worth it. You could watch all of those basically and I did that. But beyond that, you know, it's like, here's the old Superman movies, and here's the Michael Keaton Batman movies, and here's DC Daily, where it's like 15 minutes of Kevin Smith's daughter talking about DC news or whatever.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, that's what happens when you name your daughter Harley Quinn.
Yeah. You know, I gotta say, I think one of the worst streaming services, and people don't even think of it this way, but it's what it is MasterClass. I actually paid for a year of MasterClass and used it for about a week, and then it was just like, this sucks. But it's basically just a streaming service. But it sells itself as like educational, which it really isn't.
But so I'm curious about MasterClass because I think they had like really good advertising.
Yeah.
Where they framed it as like, oh, if you're into cooking, here's a Gordon Ramsay MasterClass where it's like a 10-part mini series of him showing you how to cook like his best meals.
Right.
Or like if you were into filmmaking, hey, here's an 8-part like David Lynch thing.
Right.
Where he's gonna tell you all his tricks of the trade.
That's how they sold it. But the problem is clearly no one was involved. There was nothing pedagogical about it. Like I watched most of the Neil Gaiman one. And I'm sure they said to Neil Gaiman, hey, this is your masterclass, so, you know, teach these kids about writing. But he's just not a teacher. You know, and like the videos felt like every once in a while there'd be a little good nugget of information, like a real practical thing that you could be like, okay, that's a good piece of advice. But then a lot of him just pontificating. It's a lot of pontificating. It ends up being like almost like podcasts. It's like, do you want to hear really talented people just go on and on about their work? If you do, okay, this is good for you. But if you want to like learn to write or learn how to make a movie, this is not for you. These are basically like guest lectures in a real university where they'd have some important person come and do a guest lecture. You know, the exciting thing is that the person has a body of work that you're interested in, not their ability to actually teach you anything.
Right.
And it was, and you know, I got it on a deal. I forget what the deal was. So I got it. But if you were to get it outside of that deal, it's like expensive.
Yeah. That was the thing that was really holding me back. Cause I don't remember how expensive it was, but I do remember it being expensive.
It is expensive. And I mean, some are better than others. Like, I watched a lot of the David Sedaris one, and that's basically just a podcast. It's just David Sedaris being funny, talking to his family members, very, you know, doing his David Sedaris thing of just anecdotes. You know, it's very little about how to fucking write. I mean, they'll give you little pieces of advice, like, you write every day. Like, okay, I know that. Like, they teach you how to be them, not how to be a writer. Like, Neil Gaiman gave a lot of advice of, like, if you want to be Neil Gaiman, this is how you do it.
Right.
But I'm not going to be Neil Gaiman. So, I'm looking at,
yeah, like, I even remember the show for the David Lynch one, where he gave some advice where it was like, you gotta, a movie is just 60 postcards, and then once you have 60 different ideas on 60 different postcards, you've got a movie. It's like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, but like...
maybe you've got a movie.
Exactly, because you're David Lynch. You make movies that somehow you have become the only mainstream surrealist, you know, in history. Like, except for like fucking Salvador Dali. It's like Salvador Dali and you somehow became mainstream. Like, I'm not going to make a movie like Eraserhead and anyone's going to give a shit.
Right.
You know, and you know he's not going to teach you structure. You know, David Lynch is not going to like be like Robert McKee and be like, well, in act one, you need an inciting incident, you see?
Right.
It's not going to happen. All right, let's look at some of these other ones. Crackle. Crackle's big thing was comedians in cars getting coffee.
Yeah, so they at least had something before it went to Netflix.
Right, right. That's the interesting thing. It's like some of these feel like minor leagues. Like if there is anything good, they'll get picked up and go to the bigs.
Yeah. Because I remember Crackle's big thing was that, and they had Joe Dirt 2.
Oh, right. Right. That was their big title, the second Joe Dirt movie, which I did not see.
No.
Yeah, what was Crackle's like theme, though? Was it, it was like comedy?
Their theme was it was the Sony library.
Oh, but I feel like there wasn't a lot of shit on there.
No, they would like rotate out Sony movies, which was like actually kind of a cool thing for a service that you didn't have to pay for.
But see, they should have called it Sony
where,
Plus.
Like you would, where every month they would do. Yeah, exactly. Like they, it was a free service, and every month, like if it was Halloween, they would break out like their like a slate of their Halloween movies.
Yeah,
and then like around Christmas time, you'd get a bunch of the Sony Christmas movies. Every month, they would give you like some new. They would like swap out some new stuff.
Right. But you know, it's interesting. I was just saying that I don't think being overly niche is good, like DC Nation, or sorry, DC Universe. But Crackle, I think, was lacking a thematic coherence. So it's what really makes a good streaming service? I feel like there has to be a house style.
Hits.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, you've got to have like some kind of. I mean, honestly, yeah, it just comes down. I was going to say, you know, Netflix does have a house style.
Right.
For better and worse, but it does have a style. But then, you know, you do look at the other networks, and yeah. I don't know if there's like a Hulu style or like an Amazon Prime style. Like, I guess there is.
Amazon Prime
is. A lot of their stuff is under.
Yeah. Amazon Prime is the most chintzy. Because it's still very related to Amazon, the website. So it's like, it's almost like, here, watch DVDs. We've got DVDs for you that you could watch on your, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't,
yeah.
It's not programmed the right way. Hulu, at least early on, was good at marketing itself as like, here's network stuff on your schedule. Like, you don't have to watch stuff while it airs. You can get the new network stuff.
Right.
You know, you'll get the new Simpsons the day after it comes out. You'll get the new whatever the day after it comes out.
Hulu, yeah. it turns out, like, I would say has the best, like, back catalog library.
Yes. Hulu, yeah. Hulu's got a lot of good series, not a lot of good films.
Yeah.
They're real short on film. What about CISO? Yeah, exactly.
Oh, CISO was a big... That was a big failure, but it did have like some interesting stuff, like the My Brother and Me show.
What was that?
Which was very good. That was just them doing basically like a, to call it a sketch show is like underselling it.
Uh-huh.
But it was, I guess, like a, like their version of like a Whitest Kids You Know kind of style show.
Okay. CISO, what was CISO's theme?
CISO's theme was comedy.
Okay.
Like NBC-based comedies. So it had the NBC comedies. It had like, I think it had like every season of SNL.
Oh.
That was like its big like crown jewel archive feature, which I'm not sure that might be part of Peacock now. But like CISO had like some stand-ups, some like original stand-up specials. They had a bunch of like exclusive comedy shows.
Yeah.
But it was just like, it was, like you said, it was too niche.
Right. Also, but like comedy, it's like, what do you mean by comedy? You know what I mean? Like comedy is like one of the three major styles of narrative. You know what I mean? So it's like,
right.
I feel like anytime a streaming service tries to be cool, that's not, you can't be the cool streaming service. You can't be the streaming service that has a leather jacket and sunglasses. Like it doesn't work. It just, the medium doesn't allow for it.
Right.
I feel like Crackle tried that. Crackle really wanted to be cool.
Yeah, with their Joe Dirts and...
Right.
And your,
yeah,
edgy. I don't even know what else they had.
Yahoo Screen.
Yahoo Screen was just...
It was almost...
It was just an abomination.
I feel like it was an almost. It had that space show made by Paul Feig, and it had the return of Community, the last season of Community. Which I think is not a bad season.
No, it wasn't a bad season. But the main problem with Yahoo Screen was Yahoo Screen itself.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't the programming. Because like you said, they had a couple, like they actually had a decent idea in like starting small and saying, hey, we've got a couple nice little pieces and we're going to try and build up from there. But unlike everything else that had an actual app, Yahoo Screen... You had to, there was no like yahooscreen.com you could go to.
You had
to go to Yahoo and then go to like the screen section, which wasn't just the place where you saw their original shows. It was also the place where they would show like clips from like last night's like all the late night shows and like like 5 minute recap videos of like sitcoms.
All right.
So it was very unwieldy. Never, because it was like just mixed in with that stuff.
Right.
And their like video player wasn't good. Like I remember watching Community and always like having it buffer like way too much. Or, yeah. Like, the frame rate like dipping a lot.
Some Redbox Instant. I never used that. I don't even know if I remember that. But that was.
That sounds like the Dollar Tree of any
phrases. Right. Were there any others that you could remember that maybe you tried?
I didn't try this, but I know Blockbuster definitely had a streaming service for a little while.
Too little, too late, Blockbuster.
Yeah, I believe their thing was Blockbuster's slow decline is like, it's really a topic for another day, but like just watching them go from like missing the boat on Netflix to trying to catch up.
Right.
Over like their last 8 year period was so sad because I could even pinpoint when it started. Because do you remember when they made a big out of no more late fees?
Yeah.
When really it just meant like, hey, we now have a grace period. Like there were still late fees,
right?
But like they gave you like an extra day and a half on top of like the normal time period, and then they started like bundling. Like their streaming service with like live in person renting and like that didn't work.
Right. Let me ask you, do you think that to be a successful streamer you have to have original content? Are we beyond the generation of you could be successful just with a library of pre-existing titles?
I mean, you'd have to make that the selling point. Like, you'd have to really hold your content in high regard. Like Criterion does. Because I think Criterion now has their own service. Now, Criterion's a special case.
I think Criterion movies are on HBO Max. I might be wrong about that, by the way. I know there was a Criterion.
Yeah, there definitely was a Criterion. Let's see. The Criterion channel. On a streaming service brought to you by the Criterion Collection, 14-day free trial. There's a picture of Peter Bogdanovich. That's not a shock.
Yeah.
$10.99 per month for the Criterion channel.
That's a bit too much. Yeah. Let me ask you about, have you ever watched CBS All Access? Because that's one that I am interested in, but I've not yet tried. But it's holding on there. It's lasted longer than people thought. I think when it was first announced, people thought it was not going to last, and it's holding on.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think you're kind of starting to see something interesting happen right now in this moment with streaming services, where you've got ones like CBS All Access and Peacock, and to a certain extent HBO Max.
Yeah,
where you're seeing them premiere shows on their streaming service that are like exclusive to the streaming service.
Right.
Like CBS, like AP Bio, that Patton Oswalt show that was on NBC is now on Peacock. They've got like a new, like soft rebooted Saved by the Bell coming to Peacock. CBS All Access has the whole suite of new Star Trek shows.
Right. That
was, and the Twilight Zone.
Right. The Star Trek shows are the reason I almost got it, because I hear, you know, you hear great things about the Star Trek shows,
right?
But I don't know. Yeah, you know, there's so much, and I don't mean to sound like an old man when I'm like, oh, there's too much out there. There really is so much, to the point where I feel overwhelmed sometimes. You know, like over the month of October, I try to keep it spooky, so I really just watched scary movies. And, you know, every day I'd find a new scary movie on HBO Max or Netflix or Shudder or whatever. But now that we're in November, I'm not doing that anymore. And I was, like, looking the other day for a movie, and I was like, do I want a documentary? Do I want to catch up on one of the million things that everyone tells me I need to watch? You know, should I watch The Vow now? Should I watch something on Prime? Like, it's just almost like it's like a stack of books that you feel like you have to read and you just insurmountable. It's almost too much where it freaks me out.
No, it's interesting because there are fewer and fewer TV shows that are like same day touchstones where the whole nation watched it and then a day later we're all talking about it.
Right.
But there's like a new phenomenon where like you'll see a show like a Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And like everyone has seen Breaking Bad by now.
Not me.
Well, okay, maybe not you, but like a lot of people have seen Breaking Bad.
Right.
To the point where like it's a genuine cultural touchstone.
Yeah.
And like an instant TV classic, but based completely around everyone finding it on their own time.
Right. But are there touchstones that come straight from streaming? Like everyone was talking about Tiger King at the beginning of the pandemic, but did everyone really watch Tiger King? Is Netflix that ubiquitous that everyone has it? Is Netflix like the new NBC? Because I feel like...
I think so.
Okay. Because I feel like for you can meet a small pocket of people that are like, oh, have you watched Marvelous Miss Maisel? And there's a percentage of the population that's like, this is such a great show. But then you could just easily find people that are like, oh yeah, I've heard of it, but no.
Right. Well, that also, I guess, allows people to find their own like communities. Like there's way more communities now. And you don't need to have a show, because like Marvelous Miss Maisel probably be a show 20 years ago that would have ended up on a channel that nobody watched. But right. Because it's allowed to get like a long runway and find an audience on Amazon, there it'll find like a fan base.
Yeah.
And like you'll be able to talk about it with someone.
Right. So then that leads me to this question. What do you think about asynchronous publishing versus synchronous? Netflix will give you an entire series. They'll give you all 8 or 10 episodes at once, where Hulu and Disney Plus, they do one a week, which is much more like the broadcast model. And I think in some ways works. I mean, Mandalorian is back on. We're in season 2. And, you know, we've talked on this podcast about Baby Yoda fever swept the nation. And, you know, it's kind of like, oh, did you see the new Mandalorian? I can't wait for what next week's going to be. And I don't know if it would be that way if it were all just dropped at once.
Yeah, I don't.
But also, I feel like if Netflix tried that.
I don't know. Eventually,
you're like, hey, Netflix, who the fuck do you think you are?
Right. I think there is something to the idea of, like, waiting a week for a new episode. And I think that's just, it's just like a bonus.
We're all on the same track. We're all together with it.
Yeah, I think it's just a nice bonus where like,
it's that water cooler thing.
If you're first in the door. Yeah. Yeah. If you're first in the door, you get to watch it with everyone and experience it in real time.
Right.
And if you catch it afterwards, then you can still do that, but you also have the option to binge it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's funny, there are some shows that I appreciate the once-a-week model, and then there are some shows where I'm like, just give them all to me. Like, I remember Disney Plus, one of the shows it premiered with was The World According to Jeff Goldblum, which is produced by National Geographic. And they did that weekly, and, you know, I watched it, but you could have just gave them all to me. Just give me all of them. Just let me have a day where I watch all the Jeff Goldblums. See what he's doing.
Yeah, like that wasn't a narrative show.
Right. Like The Mandalorian is like, it's Star Wars, so there's a lot to chew on. You wanna sort of drag that out a little bit.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, where do you think this is going? Do you think, I don't know, I guess to make it more vague, what do you think is the future of streaming services?
Well, I think the future of streaming services is what you're seeing now with stuff like HBO Max and Peacock. I think like this is the moment where the networks are finally playing ball, where they resisted for a little while. They said, okay, we'll put our shows on Hulu and on Netflix. But now they've seen the writing on the wall. They've taken a couple years to like get all their content back in-house.
Yeah.
And now this is the moment where you're seeing like Peacock happen. And then eventually, you know, they're gonna, it's only gonna take one big hit on Peacock,
right,
for them to start reevaluating where they debut like the big shows.
Right, right.
And then you're gonna start seeing, you know, maybe something that they've had on for a long time, like Law and Order SVU.
Right.
Maybe like next year they go, okay, you know, we're still gonna air them in primetime on Thursdays, but you know, you can watch them all at once, or like we'll give it to you like a day early.
Right.
Because why not?
Right. You know, something that I think really is an interesting confluence of events is the pandemic. Because with the pandemic now, you don't have a lot of production. You basically don't have movie theaters anymore. So you've got now major releases going straight to streaming services. And they're trying to figure out ways to, you know, make their money on these films. You know, think about this. If the pandemic had started, you know, if the pandemic had come in the 90s, let's say, before we had streaming services, there'd be nothing. You'd have nothing. You'd have network television playing reruns, and that's it. Maybe you'd be watching, you know, VHS movies. You'd be really fucking bored.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, we've got a wealth of choices. Like, it's an embarrassment of streaming riches.
Certainly is.
It's going to be a race to see, like, how these big corporations, like, navigate those waters, especially when it comes to, like, the big contract renewals, different, like, sports contracts. If ABC and Disney are paying, you know, let's say $500 million for the rights to the NBA Finals to air on ABC, maybe next time they renegotiate that deal, they say, hey, you know, we're going to pay you X amount of money, and, you know, we want to make sure that we stream it on ESPN Plus.
Uh-huh.
Because right now, a lot of these live performance, live sports deals don't account for streaming, or they don't want, like, streaming numbers, like, cannibalizing their, like, live TV numbers, when they need to kind of get off the pot a little bit and be like, no, like, we're big boys and girls. We can add up both the streaming numbers and the live TV numbers.
Well, one of the problems is they're cagey with the numbers. There needs to be much more transparency when it comes to how the streaming services, you know, how they market things, how they look at our activity and market things to us based on our interactivity, how much money they actually make. A lot of these numbers aren't released.
Yeah, no, Netflix is notorious about, like, not ever releasing their numbers.
But at what point do you become so big an entity that it's, you know, almost criminal to not release this information?
I mean, they're private companies, so if they want to keep that information, like, under wraps, they're going to do it for as long as they can.
It's interesting. I kind of want to see how the sausage is made.
But I do want to bring up, this is not a streaming service,
yeah,
per se, but it was a colossal failure. And that is, I would tangentially put this in with all the other services.
Uh-huh.
MoviePass.
MoviePass. Oh, God. That's a whole episode for itself. It was beautiful while it lasted, because,
right,
because it was a giveaway. They literally gave it away, hoping, okay, once we got you in, now we can start charging, which is the stupidest fucking thing ever, because anybody knows once you've been giving it away for free, people don't want to pay for it now.
Right.
So if you were on, like, MoviePass, I had one, and I would go to the movie sometimes 4 times a week. MoviePass, like, just saying that, like, brings back warm memories for me. The year of MoviePass was just like, I was one of these people that got so much out of MoviePass. I bankrupted that company.
MoviePass was a good theory. In practice, it's the most illogical thing in the world. Like, the theory is that some people will go to the movies a lot. Some people will just not go to the movies and forget.
Right.
Some people will see their one movie a week or one movie a month or whatever it was.
Well,
and then somehow that will all balance itself out.
The I think it's a good idea, and I think if had not been for the pandemic, you would have seen because Regal started their own version, and so did AMC. And I did the AMC one, and it was totally worth it. So I think the pandemic has actually stopped those programs from reaching their full potential. But I think it is a good idea. I think the problem was MoviePass was a third party, and they thought that the chains would somehow work with them. And all it did was they just showed them the model. It was like, oh, this is a good idea. Right. Now we'll just do it ourselves. But I think does belong
in, and it was unlimited.
Right. It does belong in this conversation though, because it called itself the Netflix of going to the movies. It tried to go with that model of interactivity, of unlimited, of accessibility. It tried to take a modern approach to an older medium, and it did not work.
No, not at all.
Rest in peace, MoviePass. I still have it. I kept mine. I'll keep it forever. I'll be buried with it. My beautiful red MoviePass card. All right, Vin. This has been a great episode. Thank you so much for being here.
No, my pleasure. I it was over and done in a Quibi.
Yes. A little quick bite. This is PCMC. This podcast is available anywhere podcasts can be found. If you like the sound of my voice, listen to my other podcast, Cuckoo Bananas, where we talk about mental health issues, wellness, and all that kind of fun stuff. You can find PCMC online at PCMC Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Vin, we end every episode by saying, go bye-bye. Go bye-bye. Bye-bye.